Welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast for anyone who wants to raise other people's money for a business or property venture. Right now, there has never been more money on the planet, and there has never been more opportunity. This podcast will help you put the two together. So, if you need money for your business or property proposals from banks, lenders, angels, whales, or dragons, this is the podcast for you.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast. I'm Ray McLennan.
And I'm Nigel T-Best. Ray, I love that counting to that where you held your fingers up. You went 5-4 and then started doing it with your fingers and went 3-1-2.
Yeah, for those who can't see the video, yeah, I believe that's what happens in professional circles. They go 5-4-3 and then you don't say the last the 2 and the 1. And then people start.
2 and a 1 and you reverse it just to put someone off their stride.
I went 1-2.
Yeah, I love it. No Ted Rogers 3-2-1 for you.
Oh no, I can't do that. No.
Well, they did it in slow motion, and nor could he.
I think he just wiggled his fingers.
That's it.
So the purpose of this podcast. Yes. What is the purpose? It's to impart knowledge on people. That is the purpose. Which coincidentally is the title.
Yeah, it is. Today's edition of the podcast, the world famous How to Raise Money podcast with yours truly, it's all about knowledge. And I guess, Ray, it comes back to the thing of you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the biggest sort of, I think, obstacle for people trying to achieve what they want to achieve is they don't even know they don't know what they don't know. And so it's almost like you see these people with suffering with addictions or whatever, and they always say the hardest thing is to admit that you might have an issue.
Mm.
You know, the hardest thing is for people to actually turn around and say, do you know what? I don't know that. I mean, you ask a politician, is there something they don't know? How far are you going to get with that?
Yeah, well, they give the standard politician's answer, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, but the reason we wanted to do it was just to maybe flip people's mindset and flip people's conversations from saying, I know that, or oh, I'm not interested in that, to just pause a moment and actually say, is this something I do need to know about? And we've got a bit of a doozy tucked away in here today, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, indeed.
When was the first time that you kind of thought, do you know what? I don't think I know everything. I didn't even know that was a thing. Can you remember any sort of breakthroughs you had on that?
In relation to property and raising money rather than when I was in the Boy Scouts?
Well, yes. I mean, we'll leave that one for another late night edition.
A late night edition. I think it was when I was doing corporate law. And during the course of corporate law, we would have businessmen. They didn't call themselves entrepreneurs because they were businessmen. An entrepreneur, it's interesting, actually. One of them said an entrepreneur is someone that takes more risks, whereas a businessman has certainty. So they take action where there's certainty. And we had one particular guy who came to see us, and he was buying up, you know, land all across the country, and we were acting on his behalf. Which involved conveyancing and other things, but it was through a company he was doing it, and he was buying it from other companies. So it was company law that we were getting involved in. And he was buying a lot. And I just remember saying to him one day, I said, you must have deep pockets for all of this. And he just sort of looked at me and he went, I'm not, and he just laughed. He went, I'm not using my own money. You know, don't be ridiculous. And I'd heard the phrase other people's money, and I'd never put the two together until that moment. I suddenly thought, hang on a minute. So he's going around, he's buying all this stuff up. And there didn't seem to be, because obviously I wasn't a party to the whole plan. I just saw pieces of the jigsaw. But at the end, when it all came out, it made absolute sense. He was basically buying, it's a bit like, you know, a guy I know who bought some pubs. And I remember thinking, well, pubs don't make that much money. And he said, no, they don't, but 20 pubs do. And there was this economy of scale, and then it was like, wow, 20 pubs, you know, that must cost a lot of money. And again, it was, well, I'm not using my own money. And then it started sort of hitting me and going, all these guys are doing all these deals, making all this, you know, making all this money, and they're not using any of their money. I mean, if you look at you know, Zuckerberg and Bill Gates and all these, they're using other people's money all the time. I mean, that's effectively what it is. They used other people's money to invest, to get the company running and going, and then the company starts to make sales and makes profit, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, that's all other people's money. And then it becomes your money if you provide value and fair exchange and you do it in a large enough quantity, then that is how you build wealth. So I think that discovery of other people's money and that other people were prepared to part with it, you know, and it sounds strange to say now, but, you know, it is. I mean, I'm in clubhouse rooms on a regular basis, not every single day, but most days. And we have a slot where we do 8 till 10, and you do a clubhouse room, obviously, in the afternoon, but I do the one in the morning, which is about property. And a lot of people come on it and say, how do I get started in property? I don't have any money, or I've only got £100,000 and I'm in London and I cannot buy anything. And then literally in 5 minutes, they've been given 5 or 6 strategies that allow them to. And quite often they come back with, wow, I did not know that. I didn't know it could be done that way. And then you get this feeling of, well, if that's how easy it is, everyone will be doing it. Now, everyone, who's everyone? I dare say if you walked out down the street and stopped 10 people and asked them if they had a property portfolio, they would say no. If you'd stop 10 people and said, you know how to get a property portfolio, they would say you have to have money, or you have to be rich, or you have to inherit it, or you have to win the lottery. And that is, you know, there's the Pareto principle, 80-20. I would suggest that 80% of, or probably more of the population, don't know what 20% of the population do know. I think it's true. As simple as that. I really do.
Yeah. It's a strange one, isn't it? Because I liken it to you've walked up and down a street, or maybe it's a corridor in a building. You've walked up and down it for years, but you've kind of noticed that there's doors off there, but you've never actually stopped and opened a door and looked inside to see what's behind that door. And then when somebody said, well, you know that corridor, you go up and down. Well, have you ever noticed people going in and out of those doors? And you kind of go, no, not really. I say, well, next time, just pause and just wait for someone and just peer in and see what's happening. And all that happens is you open a door and you reveal a world that you just did not know existed. And you kind of kick yourself because you say, for how many years have I walked past that door and never even thought to go, you know, peer through and see what's behind it? And yeah, for property, for me, it was, there's one of the big property training guys, and he tells a story, but he managed to find a solution. Whereas a couple of years earlier to what he talks about, I went through the same thing, which was I had a house and I wanted to move, but I didn't want to sell that house. I wanted to keep it and I wanted to see if I could get another one. And I remember going to the bank and I sat down, I gave them my plan, and they just kind of, you know how they put the pen down on top of the pad, they slide the pad into the middle of the room, they lean back and they say something like, so how does that work? And I thought, well, I remember, I said, look, I want to keep it this house and I want to buy another one. And he said, okay, so you're moving. Yes, I'm moving, but I don't want to sell that one. And it was pen down, pad push, lean back. So how is that going to work? And I said, well, here's the funny thing. That's the reason I'm sat here with you, because I was expecting you to tell me how that works. And he said, well, you just can't do that. I said, you can't do that. You can't have another house. And this was a guy in the bank in the mortgage bit. And I said, I thought, that's rubbish. That can't be true. But I didn't know any investors. None of the family bought houses and stuff. I didn't know anyone. There was no internet. There were no books about how to get into property that I was aware of. And I thought, right, I'm going to phone the insurance guy. I'm going to phone the insurance and say, right, I want to keep this house, move on to the next one. And and the guy said, right, okay, so you're moving. All right, when do you sell the other house? No, I'm not selling it. He went, oh, hold on, back up. Do you mean you're going to have two houses? But, and his questions went along the lines of, well, how are you going to live in both? Well, where's your post going to go? And I said, what are you talking about? I said, someone else will be living in that one. What do you mean someone else is living in that one? Well, what are you doing with it? Well, I've moved to the other one. Well, I don't see how that works. I said, so you can't get insurance for that? I've never heard of anything so ridiculous. And this was kind of major high street banks, major insurance companies. And I thought, okay, I don't know what I don't know. And I thought, maybe you could do this, but it sounds like you can't do it. And I didn't do it. And I ended up selling a house for 89,000. Within 3 years, it was worth 240. And I'd moved elsewhere. And I just thought, you know, that's just not right.
Yeah. And of course, there you are.
I then met a guy who I play golf with. And I said, what are you doing these days? He says, oh, not a lot, really. I said, oh, why not? He said, well, I used to have a couple of houses. I went, what do you mean by a couple? He went, I think he had 212 or something. And I've just sold them all. I've just sold them all because I think there's going to be a crash. And then I'll buy them all back sort of thing. And I went, hang on. Whoa, 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 whoa. How did you do that? Well, I did this. And I just went, got to be kidding me.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be kidding me. And he wouldn't tell me anything really about it because he said, no, I'm done with it. So I don't talk property anymore. And I didn't find out much, but it was just, sometimes, here's the key thing from it. You don't know what you don't know, but also sometimes the people you think should have the answer don't know anything about it either. So it's asking the right person, isn't it?
Exactly. I've done a number of trainings from the stage, and I do remember when you talk about this, you don't know what you don't know. Excuse me. I remember attending a property training, and it was about commercial property. Now, I attended a lot of training courses, not because I wanted to learn a strategy about buy-to-lets or a strategy about HMOs or a strategy about service accommodation. I was interested, but not wanting to pursue that strategy. The purpose of me attending the training is I had a lot of investors, and we were looking at finding suitable proposals for those investors. And I wanted to check out if the training was any good. Were the people that were doing the training giving good advice? What were the people thinking about the training? And then more importantly, what did they go on to do afterwards? And one of the amazing things about attending sort of training is I discovered, first of all of that was true. But when I then went back to my hometown, which was Edinburgh, all of a sudden you see all these opportunities. And it wasn't just sort of a question of, oh, there's a house that's run down and could be done up, which anyone can see. It was just everything. It's like there were opportunities absolutely everywhere. And it became from a sort of, oh, I'm in Edinburgh. It's one of the most expensive cities in the UK. It's second only to London. It's this, it's that. I had all these preconceived ideas of what I thought it was, only to discover that actually there were opportunities absolutely everywhere. Now, you've quite rightly said there that, you know, you sold a property, it was 89,000, and it was, what was it, a couple hundred thousand a couple of years later?
Yeah.
I mean, there you can quantify there and say, well, that's exactly what you lost out on simply by not knowing something that, you know, is now seems obvious. And one of the things I heard and one of the things I teach is the unconscious incompetence. And then conscious incompetence. And if you equate that to, you know, a child wanting to try their shoelaces, you know, when a child is about, you know, next year they're going to have to go to school. They've only ever worn shoes with Velcro until this point, and they've got to suddenly wear shoes that lace up. And you sit your child down and say, right, you're going to have to learn to lace up your shoes. And at that moment, they were unconsciously incompetent. They did not know what they did not know. And then when you showed them it, they thought, that looks easy. Then they go to do it. And then, of course, their fingers and thumbs are all over the place, a bit like me earlier on. And it became a conscious incompetent. So they now know that they don't know. And then they move on and become consciously competent, where they now know And then eventually it's subconsciously competent, where they just do it without thinking. And I think that's what happens in anything, that when you learn something, you go through that process. You have to go through that process. And yeah, so that's what happened with the commercial conversion training. I can remember coming back to Edinburgh and suddenly seeing opportunities absolutely everywhere. And then it becomes a question of, well, what strategy am I going to get involved in? And then how am I, you know, am I going to raise the money for it? And then you get into all that cycle. So, yeah, knowledge, it's incredible. And when you look back, you've put a price, I nearly said a dollar value, but you've put a price, you can clearly put a price on that. And I could probably put a price on all the opportunities I didn't see or I didn't pursue because I didn't know. And I've, you know, I think back to hundreds, where I just looked at something and thought, oh, there's an empty site. Someone will develop that. Or there's, what's that warehouse doing there? That would make a good block of flats. You know, I'm sure someone will do it one day. Instead of thinking, I'm going to nip in there and do that, you know?
And no, it's true.
Hundreds and hundreds. I mean, I've got some, I'm not going to mention them on the podcast because they're really good. There's some good strategies out there. And that would be, you go to a property podcast and you'll hear them. This is about raising money. But once you see what the opportunity is and you present it in a coherent way, you know, like a pitch, but without pitching, the money will come to you. It's quite bizarre how it works.
It is, because, you know, as soon as, isn't it funny how sometimes you kick off a conversation that, you know, you don't really think is going anywhere, but it reveals information to you that you had no idea about. So, you know, when we've been doing our coaching, Ray, and helping people start up businesses and things like that, and people come to you with an idea and you listen and you go, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
Never mind job, never business, never mind anything else. And this is where it's really good to work with someone who can then say, okay, right, you've got something here. So just like properties, you've got to try and say, if you're going to try and raise money on this, you've got to make it an irresistible offer to someone somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's then saying, okay, I need help in working out what's the best way to make this an irresistible offer. And one of the things that working with people like us is that we might just come at it from a slightly different angle. And you may not have known that what you could do. And therefore, that then takes something that could have been quite a, you know, it might have made some money, a marginal project. It could suddenly unleash and release potential sums of money that make it just an irresistible project for somebody to invest in. And yeah, those conversations when you don't even know that's a thing. I'm going to take you back, Ray, again, just to the golf course and another conversation I had with a guy. I was playing him in a match. I didn't know him. He was relatively new. And we were talking about things. And I just finished. I can't remember. He said something like, oh, what are you? And I said, oh, I'm an accountant. And I said, you know, it's not rocket science, is it? I mean, for goodness sake, what do you do? And he just sort of smiled at me. And I went, why? And he said, I'm a rocket scientist. And I went, you gotta be kidding me. And he said, no. And he was busy designing missile guidance systems. He'd just come back from the States where they'd been doing some testing where I said, well, what's the latest thing you've done? And I said, well, we've just managed to hit a gold plated ping pong ball in a desert 23 miles from where we started this thing off. And I went, yeah, you got to be careful with those gold-plated ping pong balls, the nasty so-and-sos, aren't they? And he said, yeah, well, yeah. He said, but this was, I guess, you know, this is in the night. This is when they started doing, you know, cameras on missiles and
smart bombs.
Yeah, smart bombs and stuff. And he was doing that. And I said, this is a joke. I said, I'm never going to win this golf match, am I? Because I have no idea if your golf ball hasn't got some sort of guidance system in it. And he said, well, funnily enough, I am working on smart bullets that can actually, you know, bend and curve and go round things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, so few bullets actually hit their intended target. So, yeah, I was completely distracted the entire game. I can't remember anything about the match apart from the fact I lost. But I quite enjoyed losing because the better he did, the more he told me about all the things he did. So it was a fascinating conversation. But, yeah, you don't know what you don't know, do you?
Have you seen the video of the drones, the small drones that fit in the palm of your hand? And they contain 1 gram of explosive. And they contain facial recognition, and they do stochastic motion and all sorts of things, which means they can fly. They can fly around and search for an individual. And then the drone effectively lands on the head of the individual, and the explosive punches a hole into their brain, and then it flies off. So you can have a situation where someone is effectively assassinated in a crowd, where a drone lands on their head, punches a bolt into the roof of their head effectively, and flies off. I mean, can you just imagine that on CSI? So hang on a minute. He was walking in a crowd. The next minute, he's dead. Yeah, but somebody saw some. But he doesn't have any bullet wounds or anything.
Well, I tell you what, and all those people that were scared of bees and wasps, they're going to go to a whole new level of panic.
Oh,
yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. And I tell you what, if you pitch that as an idea to someone, I bet someone would lend you some money to develop it.
Hey? It's already done. And you can imagine the guys that get involved in, selling weapons and all the rest of it. Oh, that's already done. There's been hundreds of millions pumped into that. We've had nothing to do with it, I'm saying, but... Yes.
We don't, stand by any of that.
No.
Tomfoolery. However,
ethical investing.
Absolutely. You know, there's enough for everyone. And I don't know why people get so mad with each other. There's absolutely no point. Complete waste of your time, effort and energy. So don't do it. There we are. That's world peace. Next to solve. So what we were thinking here is you don't know what you don't know. And the title of the podcast, you're probably thinking, guys, you've been waffling for ages. You know, what has this got to do with the title of the podcast, which is Have You Got a Million You Don't Know About? And we were just chatting about the fact that, a lot of people are still totally unaware of pensions and everything to do with pensions. And we're just going to tease this because we're going to get somebody here on the podcast who's going to talk in much more detail about kind of the nuances and how you can actually do this. But Ray, I know how many people, it's an ever-growing number who have found out that they have been sat on hundreds, if not millions of pounds in a pension pot that was going to pay them something and nothing in about 20 years time, mm-hmm. but that money could be taken right now and made to work in a much more, I'd say, lower risk environment, which is mm-hmm. property, and give you much better returns. But Ray, have you met anyone that has suddenly found out that they have, shall we say, a nice little nest egg?
Yes, two conversations I've had literally in the last week where I had a phone call with someone I've known for many, many years, and he was looking to raise some money for property. And I go through my checklist and I asked him a few questions, and then I came to the point about his pension, and he said, but I can't touch that until I'm 55, which is not true. But he was unaware. Anyway, so I asked him to get the transfer value. He got his statement out, and according to the statement, he has 857,333 or something, which is there. But as far as he was concerned, that's for 65. That's it. Can't do anything with it. Now, he's now going to find out what the transfer value is of that pension. And I suspect it will be much higher than that because he's been with the same company for over 30 years. And he's been paying into a pension since he joined that company. And they're quite a well-established company. So, and I know that they have thousands of employees and they will have a very good pension scheme lined up. And I think he is on a final salary pension scheme, one of the last remaining ones. Now, if he is, it'll be interesting over the next few weeks when he finds out what the transfer value is. But I think it's going to be a lot more than the 850. So that was the first one. Second conversation I had was with somebody who had found out that they had a pension. They'd worked for a company for 14 years. They had over 100,000 in the pension. Now, he is in his 40s. He learned how to access that pension. And in 4 years, so it took him 14 years, I think it was, to get to 100,000+. And in 4 years, he's increased that pension value to over 500,000 today. That's the difference. Because he took it away from earning sort of 1% and 2% per annum with 1% and 2% charges to putting it into something that he could manage and he could get the returns on. And that's what he's managed to do to it. So his pension is still intact, but it's now increased in value from just over 100,000 to just over 500,000 in 4 years. So that's the difference. That's when you know, and when you're educated and you know who to speak to, where to go. You know, it's not all about, you know, men in sheepskin coats, you know, flat caps trying to do a deal for you. This is a well-regulated system that's been around for a long, long time. It's just, you don't know what you don't know. And then when you find out, then you can start to take action.
No, it's so true. And what we're going to do is, as I say, we're going to get someone on who's going to break down some of the things that, you know, again, we're almost at that kind of conscious incompetence level, moving to conscious competence level with it. But you want to go to someone who's doing this all the time and is talking with pension trustees and, you know, how you do these things in a correct way. And bear in mind that pension trustees, their sole job is to make sure that you don't make a Horlicks of it. So they are not going to let you just do anything willy-nilly. There is an awful lot that you have to go through. However, if you are looking for sensible things to do in property, this is a way of being your own bank in some ways. And but a lot of people are struggling, saying, I don't have any money. So well, what have you done? Well, I've worked for 20 years at this place. Does it have a pension scheme? Yeah. Are you in the pension? Yeah. I get a statement. I don't bother looking at it because I think my pension is going to be about 3,000 a year, you know, in about 10 years time. And what am I going to do with that? And the answer is not a lot. But there's a big difference between what it's going to pay out annually in the future and what it is actually, what the pot is actually worth right now. And there can be a huge difference. So some people might sort of think, well, it's going to pay me 10,000 a year. I'm going to live for 20 years, 200,000. It might be worth, I don't know, 200,000. What you'll find is that pot could well be worth 3, 4, 5, goodness knows what, because we're back to the actuarial conversations about how you value these things. But those pension pots can be substantially more than you thought.
Mm-hmm.
And as people move around jobs, what they find is that they've got little pension pots in little place. I worked there for 3 years, I worked there for 5 years, and these pots could all be 20, 30, 40, 50, 60,000 pounds. Now, if you suddenly transfer some of those, when people say, I don't have any money, maybe you do have a pot of money. And yes, maybe it is a bit of an issue to trying, you know, a bit of a technical challenge to release all those, transfer them, set it all up. There's quite a few fees to get going. But if you've had five jobs of 5 years each and they've each got 50 grand in, there could be a quarter of a million pounds there available for you to take more interest in how that pension is administered and invested. And if you're thinking to yourself, well, I've got no chance of getting any money, and even when I retire, I'm going to have a pension of £300 a year from them, £500 a year from them, all of a sudden, you get £250,000 up front, 10 years before you're retiring, put it into property, providing the trustees, you know, agree that it's sensible, and you've got all the checks and balances in there, and due diligence and all the rest of it. That could not only earn rental income for your pension, but you could have 10 years of capital growth as well. So mm-hmm. without doing a great deal, that property, on average rates, a property kind of doubles about every 10 years, roughly.
roughly. Yeah,
in a lot of areas. So your 250 grand commercial property purchase or something like that, you know, by the time you retire, it could be worth 500,000. And I guarantee that you, those pension pots, as you say, Ray, they would not have doubled, you know, because track records of these pension pots is not good. And this is why people get disappointed. And at the moment, you know, the government is talking. I don't think I'm actually allowed to say this, so I won't. I'll just think it. So what I thought was that, you know, these pension schemes at the moment where you get all these celebrities saying, I'm in, and people are putting £10 a month into this pension pot. Well, you know, that pension pot, you can do the maths on that. And that pension pot is going to pay you out precisely diddly squat in 10 years time, because there just won't be a pot big enough. And yeah, buy some scratch cards. No, I can't say that, can I? I was thinking that. Yeah, but pensions are the thing. And some people could have had a pension that was, you know, from 20, 30 years ago.
Hmm.
And it's about to go into, it's about to be locked into some sort of low paying, poor, you know, pension solution. And I would say, right, just get in control of it. It's the dullest thing that, you know, that you can think of. And the reason nobody saves for pensions is because it's dull. It's a long way in the future. Everyone thinks it's a long way in the future and it's dull, dull, dull. So, you know, but hopefully this episode has made you think, do you know what? I remember working at a place and they had a pension scheme. Get back in touch with them. Find out, start investigating, start finding out if you've got a pot of money somewhere that, you know, could be invested or taken control of in a much better way. And we will be, as I say, hopefully lining up to get someone on who can talk about just ways of thinking about this. And hey, you know, for some people, it'll be no. I'm leaving it where it is. They say they're going to pay me that. I'm happy with that. Then that is absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no judgment. It's each their own. But at the moment, some people think there's only one route that they can do with their pension, and that is led to mature to when you retire, and that's it. But actually, there may be other options. So have you got £1 million you don't know about? Well, have you got one, Ray?
I mean, you might have. I don't have. No, I have a pension, but not that much in it, because I've been self-employed most of my life. And of course, when you're self-employed, you don't pay into these things. But I suggest that of the last 24, 25 people I've spoken to, the majority of them were unaware of it and got a great surprise when they found out about it. There's been a couple that were a bit, you know, unsure. And you're always going to have someone that's unsure of what they've got, and they didn't do anything about it. That's just life. Most of the people I've spoken to, though, are people who have approached me looking to raise money. They're entrepreneurial. They have perhaps been in a job for a number of years, and they want to get out of it. You know, that sort of thing. So you've got, I'm going to have a high strike rate there, because by virtue of the fact that, you know, a lot of people have got pensions. So when I do speak to them and they find out about it, they want to do something about it. And they're on, like I say, they're entrepreneurial. They're you know, they want to up their level of risk. So that's unusual in that respect. Because I dare say, if you did speak to 100 people, you're probably going to get, it'll be the old 80-20 Pareto rule. You know, 80% of them won't want to do anything about it, but the 20% that will are the ones that will make a difference. They're the ones that will, you know, go on and do stuff. And let's face it, you know, we have a housing shortage. I was doing the figures the other day because I'm getting an infographic made up. I wanted to get this infographic made up, but the population of the UK as we speak right now is 68,207,000 something. It's growing at about 0.4-0.5% per annum. And there's a housing shortage. The housing shortage, we need, the UK needs apparently 345,000 new homes per year. And 174,000 new houses were built in 2019. If you then break that down to affordable housing, there's only about 20 to 25,000 affordable houses built in the UK each year. And the demand for those is increasing simply because the to buy a house now, the entry level now to buy a house, the amount of money you have to have is quite high. I mean, a scheme has been reduced there, saying they're doing 95% mortgages. But if you look at the small print, there's probably going to be 95% of people aren't going to qualify for that. But it makes good headlines. So the fact is, you do need, if you want to buy a house through the traditional way, you need a large deposit. And if you want to rent, you have to have a deposit for the rent. You have to have a rent guarantee scheme or even a guarantor. You know, there's a lot more red tape built into these things now. And so even renting is difficult for some people. So it's a difficult situation. And when you look at wages and inflation, things are not keeping, you know, are not keeping pace and so on. There's an ever widening gap there. And I think if you find yourself in that widening gap, you haven't got on the property market, or you have and you want to move on, whatever, you know, it doesn't mean that the world of finance is locked to you. There are many things that can be done. You don't have to buy a house in your private name, for example. You don't have to buy any property in your private name. You can form a company. If you form a company, companies are eligible to borrow money as well. So there's many, many ways to raise money. And when you don't know what you don't know, once you get some education in that area, it starts to open your eyes, because everybody's different. Everyone's got different circumstances. We live in different places. We've got different backgrounds and so on. So all the education will do is to try and talk to you. So if there's 100 points in the education program, maybe only 20 or 30 of them will apply to you, but 20 or 30 of them will apply to someone else and someone else and someone else. You won't know until you actually take the training. You won't know until you actually read the book. You won't know until you actually speak to the person who can help. So you don't know. You might have, like I say, just the other day, a guy who thought he had nothing, 850,000 plus. And I think when he gets his transfer value in, I think he's going to be very, very surprised. I think it's going to be much higher. But we will
see. Yeah, no, it's true. I was talking to a friend of mine who's from university, worked for the same place, and I was talking to him about it, and he discovered he had, I think, 1.2 million.
Yeah.
Sat there. Now, you could say to yourself, look, even if I took control of that and was terrible at investing and it didn't grow at all, you can still, when you retire, pay yourself chunks of that far more than if you bought any sort of financial instrument that pensions typically do, which is give you a bit of a lump sum and then a annual income. You could just draw down from that pension. You know, what you wanted, so you could have, let's face it, you could have 12 years drawing down £100,000 before you run out. You know, you've got these things are, you know, different, but also you've got legacy. You can set things up and hand it down, because typically pensions halve if you die and your spouse gets half. And then when they die, that's it. Kids get nothing. So this can be a way to make things last a bit longer as well. But it's interesting, you talk to people and you ask them the question, and then they go away and they come back and say, I cannot believe what my transfer value is. I thought I'd only worked there for about 5 years. I thought it'd be about 5,000 quid, and instead it's kind of £125,000 or something. And, then they get into conversations about, okay, what can I do with it? And that's where now that you kind of know a bit, you need to go, as you say, Ray, and fill in the dots in your education, and make sure that you do that, and make sure it's like anything with property related, get a few quotes and go see some work and talk to people about who's done what where, to see whether you're getting the right person in to do the job. And certainly don't have a go yourself.
That's for sure. All right.
But there you go. So yeah, have you out there in podcast land got £1 million you don't know about? There you go.
And on that bombshell.
It's a goodie. Yeah, right. Have we had any reviews?
We've had a few.
Have we?
Yep. But we encourage reviews. If you like what you're hearing, go to your podcast app and leave us a review. Thankfully, we're on 5-star reviews. We haven't upset anybody yet.
There's plenty of time.
There's plenty of time, indeed. I haven't upset anyone yet.
Here we go. Great podcast, straight to the point.
That's it.
I love it.
Straight to the point, no waffle apart from this episode.
I was going to say, he hasn't listened to the last few episodes. But no, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for doing that. Still 5 out of 5, yeah. That's fabulous. And don't forget, we're back on it, aren't we? Working on our offering to people to, you know, take advantage of knowledge and taking action so that, you know, you can move things along in a way that you never thought was possible. And that kicks off by just going to htrmoney.com. And you can sign up there, get on our wait list for the book. Thank you to all those that are doing that. We were actually talking about it yesterday, and we could probably do with doing a little bit more on it over the next few days as well. But yeah, let us know. We'd love to be involved in whatever you're doing. Well, no, that's a bit too general, isn't it? In helping you raise the money and go through what your strategies are, because yes, we love doing it. We love helping, don't we?
And if you go to my Instagram account, which is at Ray_McLennan, or if you go to me on Clubhouse, which is at Ray McLennan, or find me, you'll be able to hit on a link there and you can arrange to. I do have some time slots allocated for 15-minute phone calls with people. So you can take advantage of that and have a call with me if you wish.
There you go.
All right.
And if you, I'm at Nigel T. Best on Clubhouse. You can pop around and have a coffee if you want. You're not allowed to.
In the club.
Yeah. But there we go. Ray, great stuff. Looking forward to it, because we're going to be tackling over the next few weeks, taking action, overcoming concerns and fears about time, money, doubt, and also talking about, you know, how you take the next step in your journey on how to raise money.
Indeed. All right.
All right, until then.
I've been Ray McLennan.
I'm still Nigel T. Best. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the How to Raise Money podcast. It's made for people who want to raise money as debt or investment equity for their business or property proposal or empire. The website has all the useful links and underlying research, and you can get downloads of the checklists and other useful information. See you next time, where we can show you how to raise money. There is abundance. There is money enough for everyone on the planet. The question is, who has yours?